Hello, and welcome to a special podcast presentation of The Yards Spring 2018 Issue Launch and Salon, recorded live at CKUA on Thursday, March 1st. I'm Jeff Sampsono, publisher of Edmonton Quotient, an online magazine partnering with the print magazine to bring you this conversation. We think it's an important one. The spring issue of the magazine is focused on women in our core neighborhoods, including the problem of street harassment and the safety of our public spaces. You can pick up a copy of The Yards at all kinds of locations in the downtown and Oliver. Check out a listing at theyardsyeg.ca. You can also find the cover story by Jessica Barrett, Words on the Street, posted online at edmontonquotient.com. It's an exploration of how the growing arena and entertainment district nightlife is shining a light on Edmonton's street harassment. And there's a video conversation at edmontonquotient.com where we talk with five people about the issues of street harassment and sexual violence and what we can start to do to make our public spaces and places safe and welcoming. But I should stop talking so you can hear the discussion you came for. The Spring Salon, sponsored by ATB Financial, included a panel on women in the core. Danielle Parody is the first voice you'll hear. She's the moderator of this discussion. A Métis writer here in Edmonton, she's been a regular columnist in Metro Edmonton over the last few years and has an article in this issue of The Yards. Grace Cleveland is a law student at the University of Alberta and teaching fellow at the Peter Lougheed Leadership College, recently bringing the online campaign Law Needs Feminism Because to our city. Lana Cuthbertson is a senior manager at ATB's Business Innovation Spark team and was most recently the chair of Equal Voice in Northern Alberta, running the campaign to get more women running for and elected to municipal office. Luam Kiflamariam is one of the many tireless Community League volunteers building a better Edmonton, currently dedicating her time to the Oliver League. A couple of notes. Chevy Rabbit was also going to be on the panel, but our schedules just didn't end up aligning for this evening. And this conversation includes references to and descriptions of street and sexual harassment, which may be triggering. And now, let's jump into the panel discussion.
For me personally, tonight's panel is really interesting. We're going to explore issues that women face in the core, but the conversation isn't just about women. Right now I'm reading this book, So You Want to Talk About Race, by Ijeoma Oluo. I knew I was going to screw that one up. Oluo. And she says that although there are very few hardships out there that only hit people of color, a lot of the hardships that hit people of color may also affect white people, but it affects people of color more. So that's the really interesting thing when we start talking about inclusion, is that if we're making the space better for women or mothers, then it tends to make space better for men as well. So inclusion really makes a city more accessible to everybody. So with that, I'm just going to get right into it, throw open a question to our panel. If Luam could start, how do we build a city that is more inclusive of women, non-binary people, and even families?
Wow.
Right in there.
What a question.
Solve it.
If you could solve this in 1 minute, please.
Oh, I don't know is my answer, but I think some of the ways that we can come to a solution together is if we have, you know, different people come to the table to have a conversation to discuss what issues affect us, what issues that we can work on together. So, you know, in a nutshell, I'd say first step would be having a conversation with a diverse and, you know, with an inclusive group coming together to have a discussion, A, accepting that there are issues, and B, working together to come up with some solutions.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Grace, I don't know if you've had a chance to read it yet, but in this edition, there's a really good story by Jessica Barrett, and she actually writes about two women who left the core after the arena was built due to street harassment. Do you have any experiences downtown with street harassment, and what do you think has it changed with the arena being developed?
I have been downtown a handful of times since the arena has gone up. And I actually hail from Surrey, British Columbia, which is a place that's kind of renowned for having a bit more of a rough street scene. Coming here since the arena has come to be, I would say it's definitely not like Surrey. So I would also say that's a good thing. So I think for being a young woman, mm-hmm. when I would go out sometimes in Surrey, I would be really worried. I would almost be at the point where I would be thinking, oh, should I bring a kitchen knife, you know, to walk across the townhouse complex just to go hang out with my friend, because that was just kind of the area that I lived in. So coming here, I haven't really seen that, and I don't know if that's because now it's different. I think that's on a macro level, though, and I think on a micro level, there are the kind of violences that are addressed in the article, which are more verbal. Not so much fear for your life, but perhaps fear for, you know, that pit in your stomach of, why can't I walk down the street without being objectified? In terms of that sort of micro sphere, I think that does still exist, and I think it doesn't just exist walking from one building to another in the downtown core, but I think it also exists where I spend a lot more of my time, which is inside of the university campus. So I'm not sure if that answers the question, but...
Yeah, that's great. Luann, we were talking before, and you mentioned that for you, having more eyes on the street was a good thing downtown.
For sure. I've lived in Oliver for the past 5+ years, and for sure, for me, being able to... I was sharing the story of how when I was... Back in the day when I was in university, I used to take the bus to West Edmonton Mall, and the number 100, I would take it back to downtown and then catch a bus to the north side. But I remember at 6 o'clock, there was nobody downtown. It was a little bit eerie. It was scary. I couldn't, you know, I would never be here by myself. I usually had my sister or a friend with me waiting for the bus. And our mission was to get on the bus and get out of here, right? And now I live here, and I think, you know, if I go out for drinks with friends and it's 1 o'clock, I feel safe walking home along Jasper Ave. And that's just Jasper Ave, because I know there's more people. And that's not to say that I'm not very much aware of how many people are in front of me, who's across the street, who's behind me. I'm very much conscious of that, but at least I know I'm a little bit safer because there's a little bit more people, there's some stores open, and I still have my car keys in my hands just in case. And if I feel somebody's like behind me and I'm thinking like, are they following me? I'm gonna wait in the when the red light goes on, I'm going to pretend I'm going to tie my shoes to make sure he passes in front of me, because I don't want somebody behind me. And then the last 3 blocks to my condo outside of Jasper, when I go into the interior, I'm like, I'm running sometimes. If it's not icy, I'm just running. And I was like, I know for sure somebody's following me. They're going to have to be running with me. But I still feel a lot more safer than I did when I was in university. And I think we've come a long way as a city, and for all the, you know, street harassment and so on that, you know, I'm sure happened, at least there's people here. And there's, you know, there's crowds, there's people that I can theoretically run to, or less chance of it being in an isolated place where something can happen to me.
Yeah, it's really interesting to me. What strikes me is the there's a certain level of comfort that both of you have expressed in just how you have to watch out for yourself downtown. A kitchen knife was mentioned in Surrey, walking with your keys. And I think that that's something that men sometimes forget, is how conscious women are when they're moving through these spaces. Lana, is there anything that you want to add about how the arena has developed or how development has happened downtown?
Yeah, I think it was in the Yards as well that I read this afternoon, cover to cover.
did your homework?
Yeah, I did my homework. There was a discussion about how the arena was developed in the first place, how the plans were put together, and the lack of consultation of diverse groups of individuals who maybe live in the core, who might have different perspectives on what an arena, a huge, huge $600 million arena, would do to their neighborhood, to their safety. My background is I volunteer with trying to get more women into politics, and I think that effort results in plans like a big arena right downtown in the middle of a city, maybe. Enjoying different perspectives when you have different perspectives at decision-making tables while those issues are being debated.
I'd actually like to add a little something to what Lana was just saying. I think that in terms of the comments that we were making as well, we're speaking as pretty privileged people who we're going into the arena or we're going into a bar, and we're not necessarily the people that are sort of being pushed back and pushed out and pushed into areas where that violence still exists in a much more robust way. So we may feel and notice things on one level, but I think that it's important that we do remember that that's just a small sample of especially the more marginalized people in living perhaps even on the streets. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is really important, I think, to keep everyone in mind when we talk about inclusion and public safety. So I'm glad that you added that one. What's something that we can start doing immediately, Lana, to make our public spaces more inclusive?
Talking to the people we want to include, I think, and figuring out lots of different ways to reach out to those different communities, I think, at all sorts of different levels of community organizing up to our levels of government. I was sitting at work at ATB across the street the other day, having a meeting as part of our Women in Leadership group at ATB, and it was all about diversity and inclusion, and I joined the meeting late, and someone said, "So, Lana, we're going to put you on the spot. What does it feel like when a room is diverse and inclusive?" And I was like, "Well, I love the spot." And no problem there. But it really gave me pause because I had to sort of say what I thought as almost an instinct. And what came out was something like inspiring, surprising, challenging, a growth opportunity. And when you have diverse voices and lots of different types of discussions and meetings with people you may not encounter just through your normal patterns, you get really, really great results. And Luan was saying that earlier as well. I think one of the first things you said was having lots of different conversations with lots of different types of people is just one of the first steps, and it's really important.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of, do you think, Luan, are there particular challenges for people of color or Indigenous people? I know, like, I'm Métis, but I present as white, so people don't tend to racialize me, whereas I wish Chevy was here. She actually was the victim of a hate crime, more because of how she presented in her gender than for her race, but it was still something that that came out and affected people very strongly. And I know Indigenous people do face racism in Edmonton still. And do you think that we're doing enough for people who are either marginalized, people of color, people who are kind of outside of the traditional conversation on public safety?
I don't really know how to answer that question in terms of like representing the whole diversity, everybody. I'm going to share a little bit about myself, and I think sometimes people forget when we're talking about, you know, female safety or, you know, women in the public space and so on, that there are some people, like for me personally, that I have to deal with the fact that I'm a black woman. And, you know, my family immigrated to Canada when I was 9, and I didn't realize I was a black child until I came to Canada. And I remember having this realization when I was like 9 or 10 years old. I was like, oh, I'm not just a child, I'm a black child, you know? That came into my consciousness. And so for me, when I go out, I sometimes forget and I think like I'm just a woman, but then people, something reminds me. And so on top of that, I have to deal about, you know, me being a woman too. So when I'm dealing with these issues, they're kind of, you know, they're kind of two different spaces, but they're kind of one because I have to deal with all of it myself. Like, I have to experience it. And sometimes it just, you know, there's this idea, even I think with other women, when they tell me, like, they've experienced sexual harassment or whatever, I'm like, why didn't you tell this person to F off? Why didn't you leave? Why didn't you do this? And I think, like, oh, you know, sometimes I just get tired, you know? I've worked hard. You know, I'm emotionally drained. I'm volunteering. Work was hard. And, you know, just to give you an example, last week somebody, I went to a community event and I was talking to a community league president and he was an older gentleman and he seemed nice enough and he lived not too far away from here and he'd taken a bus and he asked for a ride downtown and I was like, sure, no problem. And when we were driving, he was like, I have a funny video to show you. And I was like, oh, okay. And I'm driving and he shows me this picture of this woman taking the shorts and underwear down of a man and exposing himself in this video. And I was like, huh. And I was smiling, like, I was like, huh. And I was thinking, like, the audacity of this man. He doesn't know me. Like, this is inappropriate. How dare he? Like, why did he think this was appropriate? Like, all these things are going through my head. And then I say, that's not nice. You shouldn't show people that. And he was like, but you're smiling. And I was like, and so I was like, that's not nice. You should ask people if they want to see it before they see it. You should tell them. He's like, well, then it's not funny. I was like, it's not funny. And he's like, well, I've shown it to both men and women, and some people think it's funny and some not. And I was like, well, it's not nice. And in my head, I was thinking, I'm going to be on this panel about this Me Too in Edmonton, and people are telling me, like, it's being overtalked, it's a fad. And I was like, you don't get it. You're part of this. Like, we're talking to you. But you know what? I just didn't have the energy to talk to him because a few, like, earlier that week, I'd gone to coffee with somebody, and they told me I didn't look black enough to be from Africa. And so I was like, you know, that's like my second phrase of after, you're pretty for a black girl, right? So, like, these things happened to me, and you know, I just, like, by the time he came around, like, I didn't have the energy to educate him how wrong this was and so on. I just wanted to drop him off, and I wanted to go home and sleep because I had work the next day, right? And so there's this thought that, like, I have to be responsible for men or other people saying, you know, either subjugating me to racial insensitivity or sexual harassment, that it's my responsibility to educate them, to tell them how wrong this is, to have this discussion. It's like, no, you know, I'm tired. And sometimes I just make a conscious decision and say, like, I'm not going to have this conversation because, you know what, next week I know I'm going to have an opportunity and hopefully I'm not tired and I can explain to you why this is wrong. But, like, these are some of the things that I think people who aren't, who don't deal with it or are conscious of it deal with. And I know, having said all of that, I'm still more privileged than an Aboriginal woman who may be homeless, that I'm still in a privileged place that, you know, socioeconomically, I can speak for myself, I don't wear a hijab, you know, all of these things is still, I still come in a privileged space, but I still have to deal with all of this. And I think sometimes I just, you know, I don't know how to have the like sexual harassment or safety without talking about the other stuff. And if people aren't prepared or want to divide it, I'm like, I don't know how to divide it. So I don't know. Like, it's just sometimes people are very clear, like, we're talking about this or this. Like, you can't. I was like, I don't know how to do it. So when you say, like, are we including more diverse or people in the conversation, I say, like, yes, but sometimes it doesn't feel like it's in a holistic approach. Mm-hmm.
I think a really good starting place is sometimes just hearing stories like what you share, mm-hmm. because there's a certain experience that other people don't have, and they don't think about it because it's just not their reality. Speaking of which, when it comes to planning or involvement in government, Lana, how do you think that having women or people of color or queer people at the table changes the conversation for the city?
Communities and cities are made up of everyone with their own unique experiences and their own holistic experiences, and everyone comes from their unique place and has their own story. And if you can have lots of different types of stories being told around a decision-making table, I think you can end up with decisions that are being made on behalf of a community that are better for more of that community. So that's my whole shtick, is more diverse voices around decision-making tables helps you make better decisions for the community that you're serving.
Now, Grace, you did mention that downtown Edmonton was better than Surrey, of course, which is good. Good to know. I think that's a step up for Edmonton. But you brought to the U of A recently Law Needs Feminism, and I don't know, is anyone familiar with that at all? Okay. Well, one person back there. So could you tell us a little bit about what that was, and what was the reception of the law school when you first started talking about the need for feminism in law?
So I'll start with what Law Needs Feminism Because is. It's a national initiative that began in McGill University. And basically, a couple of law students got together and they were inspired by things such as Robin Camp's comments, why couldn't you just keep your knees together, to a rape victim? And a real bad problem that's happening, especially in the east of Canada. There's a lot more documentation of it, but I think it's rampant everywhere. Judges saying to female lawyers in the courtroom, little lady, or talking consistent, always talking over them, cutting them off, interrupting them. And another, just a fact that I happen to know, about 50% of law students that graduate are women, about 15% of partners high up in law practice are women. So that's a huge discrepancy. And the legal profession is simply, unfortunately, in many ways, unfriendly to women, I think. And it's changing. It's getting better, but definitely law needs feminism. So those are a few examples why. I was personally inspired to bring the campaign because, actually, it was Trump.
Isn't it always?
And I honestly, maybe 3 years ago, I didn't even think I was a feminist. I wouldn't have used that term. I wouldn't have used that language. And then one day, I just thought, God, we all need to be feminists. We all need to be, especially when we have a president that's going out grabbing women by the pussy and bragging about it. So I think the culmination of those things just kind of inspired me to make it happen. I started off not knowing if there would be two people that joined in, because I do find that the community of lawyers and law students are a little bit more conservative in what I've gotten to know around here, coming from BC, coming from Surrey, with the kitchen knives. Sorry. But so I didn't really know what to expect, and I just kind of took a leap of faith. And although we had the smallest campaign actually to date, we have 23 portraits. I encourage you to look it up after you leave here, of course. And yeah, we had people come out. I think my favorite photo was because our daughters, law needs feminism because our daughters deserve equality. And I think our children deserve equality, of course. And I think that's kind of what it's all about for me, is I'm a second generation lawyer, soon to be. So I would like for my children one day to not have to fight the same fight that I'm fighting, that my parents were fighting, that has been going on forever. So yeah, law needs feminism, but I think so does every other profession, and so does every other angle and area of life. So it's my two cents.
Awesome. Can I just share about feminism being everywhere? I was in another community event. I go to a lot of community events. They're amazing. Like, don't judge them based on these two stories I tell you. This one's a... I was at a community event, and Ian, what's his last name, from the downtown... O'Donnell, yeah. The downtown... President of Downtown Business Association. We were talking about something, and another gentleman joined us, and we were talking, and I don't even remember what we were talking about. And so the other gentleman started, you know, talking, and I was like, okay. He started talking, and then he said something, and I was giving my opinion, and I don't even know what I was saying, but I just remember Ian saying, "You just interrupted her." And then I was like, "Oh, thanks, Ian." I just thought it in my head, and then I was like, "Oh," and then he's like, "Oh." He was like, he looked shocked, and he stopped. And I was like, oh, okay, so I can continue my thought. And I started talking, and then he interrupted me. Ian said, "You just did it again." So he interrupted me a second time. And I was like, and Ian said it. And I was like, oh, thank you, Ian. So, and then I started talking, and I was saying something. And then Ian said, "You just did it again." And so he told him three times that he was interrupting me, you know? And I didn't have to say anything. And I just thought, oh, that's an example of an ally. You know, when people say, like, we need men as an ally, that's what it is. You know, I shouldn't have to say, "You're interrupting me. Please stop." If somebody notices somebody's being interrupted, like, you should say something, just like Ian did. And I just walked away, and I was like, "Way to go, Ian." I didn't tell him. I didn't want to, like, you know.
Nobody tweet that.
Yeah. But I was like, thank you, Ian. You know, we weren't even talking about that, but thank you that you didn't have to be prompted. You knew that this was unacceptable, and thank you for saying something on behalf of all women, because that's how I saw it. And, you know, I went along, but I'm just saying, like, that's a feminist to me.
Yeah, that's really interesting, the role that a man can have just simply saying something that doesn't roll into something larger, whereas as a woman, sometimes it's challenging to be the person to advocate for yourself or even for another woman, because then you're suddenly a feminazi. Like, look at this evil, crazy woman who's just being mean, whereas when Ian does it, it's like, oh,
for sure.
I guess I should say sorry.
It's unfair. That's not fair either.
Yeah.
No, it's certainly not fair. That is another discussion.
Yes. And
we could have a whole other panel on that one. But,
to add that I say, like, I'm a proponent of diversity. And just to let you know, when I walk into a room, I know how many men there are to women. I know how many visible minorities are. And I know if I'm the only Black person, I am very much aware of it, you know? So when I have an opportunity to have a say, I always say, where's the diversity? I want to say it once, and I don't want to repeat it every time we have a meeting or whatever. So I like somebody else to come in and be like, hey, you guys, remember we talked about diversity, and somebody else be the champion for it, because I get tired.
Yeah, there's really only so much you can do. And Lana, you mentioned earlier when you walked into the room and people were asking, what does it feel like to be in a diverse space? That's such an interesting question. Like, I don't think anyone's ever asked a white man that question before. Show of hands, no?
Maybe that's the problem.
That would be an interesting question. Too bad we don't have a man on the panel. Lana, Edmonton's changed really quickly, and besides consultation, what do you think that we can do to make things better right away for public safety or to make spaces more inclusive?
I have a hard time with that one, because I can speak for myself, and don't necessarily want to speak on behalf of everyone. That's kind of why I like the consultation thing, because it's like, yeah, there are going to be lots of different things. But for me, I'm just thinking, like, how do I, when you notice that you're in a minority, like if you walk into a room and you notice you're in a minority, it really helps for everyone in that room to kind of have an awareness of a bit of a structure and almost ground rules in a way. So just thinking of my own experience in in spaces where, like even at work, at the bank, like Ben was saying, it can be an old boys club there sometimes. And in politics and different experiences in politics, being very explicit about saying, we're a welcoming open space, you know, what does everyone need to feel welcome and comfortable here? So that can be, I think, demonstrated in a lot of different ways and in a lot of different places. And we have lots of institutions and businesses and events and things where that can be made overt. And something I really, really like that that has happened over the last number of years is that most events I'm at, someone will kick off the event by acknowledging that we're on Treaty 6 territory. And that, it's unbelievable how much of a difference that makes. And And how much every time I hear that, I just learn a little bit more, or I think about that more, and I think about how that has an impact on making everyone sort of understand where they are and the history of a place, and hopefully including people and acknowledging that. So I guess all of that to say is that there are, I think, probably lots of little types of inclusive type efforts that everybody can make and that are accessible to everyone that that will add up to make a big difference.
Speaking from the Indigenous perspective, Indigenous women are carded 10 times more than anyone else in the city, so police could stop carding Indigenous women and that would probably help make things feel safer right away. So it sounds like what I've heard today is that things are better, Edmonton is kind of moving in the right direction. How do you think City Council is doing, though, Lana, when it comes to inclusivity and talking about women and women in the core? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we recently moved from 1 to 2 women city councilors. That's a 100% increase. That's double. That's huge progress, everybody. City Council could probably be a lot more diverse, and that's a massive, complex effort. Another interesting thing that's happening that I understand that the City of Edmonton has taken on recently is the gender-based analysis. So applying that gender-based analysis lens and framework to developing policy is really important, something I think that's been started at multiple levels of government, provincial and federal, I think, do it, and now the City of Edmonton is doing it, which is great. And I just think, man, wouldn't that be great sort of combined with more women on City Council and more marginalized voices in general on City Council. So, we're looking at 2021, I guess, is the next municipal election. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. But there's definitely an acknowledgement as well, I will say, amongst a lot of the men who sit on City Council of the need for more diversity, and a particular shout out to Councillor Andrew Knack, who's a major supporter of the organizations that I've been a part of advocating for more women in politics, and really thinking about how he can play a role as an ally too, and that's a really important, important thing to see, and there's lots to be done and explored there.
Luann, when you're at the community events that you go to, when you're not having very awkward videos shown to you, do you hear anything about like what families need downtown and what can help families decide to come here and stay here?
Well, that one's a little bit easy in Oliver. You know, we just need like a 3-bedroom housing options, and I think our civics committee in Oliver Community League. Anytime there's new development, they're always advocating for that, as well as affordable housing, like low-income housing options. But those kind of things are what families that I've spoken to have said. And you know, there's a family that lives in Oliver, and it's a townhouse. They don't have a backyard or anything like that. And they're like, we don't need a backyard. Why? For a park? It's like across the street. And, you know, we have the space, the garden's like over here, and the swimming pool is over here. Why would we want to spend like half our lives driving the kids around and whatever? And so I think there's also this perception that, you know, once you have a family, you have to go to suburbia and have like a big yard and a big house, which isn't necessarily true. And I think where there is options, then people can can decide what's best for them versus this is the only option available for you.
Grace, I'm gonna put you on the spot as a college student and assume that you're maybe out partying more than I am because I'm old now.
I'm a law
student,
though.
But maybe that's not true. That's true. Okay.
Reading.
Never mind then. what I'm asking is, we do have White Ave started out, I'd say, a little overdeveloped, where we got more and more bars until it eventually became, when I lived there, basically you couldn't go out at night if you didn't. You know, if you didn't feel like having somebody yell at you. Downtown, what are your experiences? Do you feel like is the nightlife good? Is it positive? Is there a certain kind of development that you would think would be too much? Or should we just keep piling on the bars, fewer bars, restaurants? Like, what are your experiences when you're walking around in the core?
Like I said, I get out a little bit, not that much. Sadly, I think one of the biggest problems with going out is the students in schools. There's a pretty rowdy culture, and in fact, a lot of drinking goes on, and of course, drinking makes things a little messy when it comes to consent, and lines apparently get blurred. And things happen. I think it's, for me, I've just kind of opted to not really be part of that scene because, I don't know, I don't ever want to be in a position where I'm not safe. And I guess, like, that fraternity culture just kind of is a thing that I'm not really interested in. So... I'm maybe not the best person to comment on it because I try to stay away, but maybe that's a comment in itself.
Yeah, it's interesting. I live right downtown on around 109th Street, and so for me there's bars over here, there's bars over here. Like, I can't get to the grocery store without coming across drunk people. So I think we're probably getting really close to having enough nightlife, and then there's a line between a vibrant nightlife and a frat house. Sorry if there's any frat boys here. I don't want to malign all frat boys. There's some great ones out there. I think we're pretty much out of time. I just wanted, is there any final thoughts on what we can do for women in the core to help make this the kind of place that women want to stay?
The core of Edmonton is where a lot of our houses of power are, and we need more women in those houses. So if you're a woman, have you thought about running for office? A couple of the people in this room have run for office. Go you. And if you haven't thought about it, or if you're anyone else, consider asking. Women really need to be asked to step up and think about filling those houses of power and thinking about running for office. So that's my little that's my plug from my organizations, and I think it'll make a big difference, and especially for the community that we're in Edmonton.
I'm gonna ask a lot of ladies in my life. To run into politics.
maybe you should run.
I think there's, you know, big ideas and things we can do as a society, but there's also individual, like, responsibilities that we can take. And small things like, you know, for example, just since I was young, I never allowed any kind of racist or prejudiced talk in front of me. And I don't care if that person group or whatever you were talking about wasn't there, and they're like, they're not here long, just calm down. It's like, no, my expectation is I don't want you talking like that in front of me, because I expect that other person, when they talk about black person, I want them to be respectful. So there's this expectation that I do my part and I expect everybody else to do their part. And so it's little things like, you know, you're with your buddy and he's saying something that isn't appropriate, just being like, you know, that's, you know what, you should probably, you know, say it in a different way. Or what you're saying is actually making me uncomfortable. It'd probably make a lot of women uncomfortable. Just a heads up. And just imagine if that same person, even like this rowdy college boy who drinks a lot or whatever, or not, or just your average Joe, like, hears that from different people that he trusts in his life. The message is, no, this isn't acceptable. We're not going to make a big stink out of it and give you the riot act or whatever. But if somebody's getting the consistently the same message saying, actually, this isn't appropriate, like, you shouldn't be talking like this. This is disrespectful to women. Like, if they're just hearing it from different people and people they trust, and, you know, they trust and they're honest to, I just think, like, we can have a grassroots movement where we, the society, can make choices instead of waiting for our political space or whoever to make those changes and enforce it on people, because, you know, attitudes and prejudice or whatever live in us. They don't live, and you can't figure out a law that says don't be prejudiced, because there is one, and we're still here. Like, don't sexually harass women. It's out there. Right? But it doesn't really stop. But I think as a society, if you start talking about it and holding each other accountable as to what is acceptable and not acceptable, and language is very important, I think it can have a lot of important change and impact.
Just to end it all off, I think what you're kind of talking about is education, and that's sort of what I'm passionate about. And I think that to make the culture something that we want it to be, I think we have to just start young and start old and keep going until people get the picture. And I think the beautiful thing is that now we have social media, we have so many more avenues that we can pursue sort of a more democratic form of education that's accessible to more people. And I think that bringing in these sort of other voices, especially like in my spiel, which is all about feminism, I think the more that we do that, the more success we'll have in the future. So, yeah.
Okay, well, thank you very much to all the panelists. I think you guys did a really great job of sharing your experiences. And thank you to all of you for coming out.
Thank you again to Danielle Paradis for hosting this conversation, and to Grace Cleveland, Lana Cuthbertson, and Luamka Flammarium for their insights and sharing their experiences. Thanks, too, to the team at The Yards for their help in this publication partnership and an important and excellent spring issue. This podcast is also made possible by the work of Sona Shavda to produce the panel and Andrew Williams for technical support. The conversation continues at edmontonquotient.com, where we've posted the cover story from the spring 2018 issue of The Yards and produced a discussion on the same topics, which you can watch in a new video. Find the new issue of The Yards at downtown and all of our businesses listed at theyardsyeg.ca, published 4 times each year. Thanks for listening to this podcast, a partnership of 2 of Edmonton's local journalism publishers, The Yards and Edmonton Quotient. You can find more stories, podcasts, and community items at theyardsyeg.ca and edmontonquotient.com. And hey, if you've listened this far, consider doing what you can to support more Edmonton journalism by sharing this podcast, sharing the stories from the new magazine, becoming a paid supporter of Edmonton Quotient, or even buying an ad. You can also volunteer with the Downtown and Oliver Community Leagues, which help publish The Yards. I'm Jeff Samsonow. Thank you for being part of the conversation.